If I could just do anything in life, like, seriously, just be selfish, do whatever I want to do, to be a gardener. Like, I love it. Like, just spend all day in the garden. You don't believe me, do you?
No,
no one believes me. If ever I get a couple hours off, I'm sitting there in the garden, aren't I, doing something with the kids. I love it. Not particularly great gardener, but I love it. The other thing I love doing is flying drones all day. Seriously, a bit of a random collection, skiing, gardening, flying drones, my life would be complete and happy. Anyway, you don't get enough time for these things once you're married and all kids. Actually, Mel's very generous, she does give me a bit of time to do these things. She's looking at me going, I'll let you off. Another thing I really want to do in life is renovate wherever I'm living, right? I just love renovation. Now, I don't watch television, so... I actually think it's been over like a year since I've put on free-to-air TV. You know, like growing up, seriously, Dad and family would have TV on every night in the news. I haven't done that for years, probably. I worked out the other day, it's actually since I was a teenager that I watched a full game of sport on TV. It's a bit weird, hey, I'm not into sport. I know some of you are. It's been since I was a teenager, so I'm almost 40 now. So over 20 years since I've watched a full game on TV. But you know, I watch a little bit of Netflix from time to time, enjoy that. And if I had time, like I don't have because I'm married with five kids, I'd watch renovation shows on TV. And they're the ones I really like. I haven't watched too many of them, but you know the ones that are sort of stressful and the couple always breaks up halfway through the reno project. There's always budget overruns where there's, you know, $1 million renovation project and it's a DIY project manager who's got all the experience of being a Kmart checkout chick. It's a big project. You know, they always end in disaster and somehow they pull it together. I love those shows. And actually, I do know a little bit about renovation because growing up, our family moved around a little bit, but wherever we went, whatever house we went into, Dad always renovated. It's true, hey, every single house he renovated. I remember... We lived in a little place that had a two-bedroom house, and we turned it into a 16-bedroom house and ran church camps out of it, and as well as a bunk room that had about 40 people could sleep in it, you know. So that's what Dad did. Then we moved to Toowoomba. We're in a place for 1 year in a three-bedroom home, and he renovated it, and then we moved. Like, he just got into it, and he planned and whatever he did. We moved over near the university in a four-bedroom little brick home. And Mum got involved in reaching out to helping out international students who are over here studying at university. Next thing is, Mum and Dad were cooking for about 60 of them every week in our house. So Dad decided to renovate and put on a big hall at the back of our house. Seriously, overcapitalization, bad for everything else. But in the end, 100 people a week Mum used to cook Chinese for. She used to cook Chinese for Chinese people. Anyway, I resented the stuff after a bit. The whole place, like... Look, we're actually pretty white in this room, to be honest. I love Asian food now, and I love Asians, but there's a sort of smell about their cooking. But anyway, that was growing up. I don't know why I got into that. Didn't mean to. You get these random things from me. I'm sorry, I'm talking about renovation, right? And so myself and Ella lived in three homes, and the first one we renovated, hey, Mel, loved it. Then we moved to this house that needed nothing done. This is the most unhappy I've ever been living anywhere. Some of you remember Mitchell Road, 39 Mitchell Road. It was like perfect. Didn't need anything done. Didn't even need a light bulb changer when we moved in. Like, it drove me nuts. I just couldn't wait to get out of there. And then some of you know we bought Jim and Robin's home, and that's where we are now. And Jim and Robin had that. And a beautiful home, beautiful spot, and I loved it. But I reckon, Jim, when I was walking around with you that day, you could see my eyes sticking over, thinking I could put a garden here and do this here and do an extension. I love that stuff. And even if it doesn't need it, I love it. So that's what I've been doing lately. And I've been planning what I can do in the garden. I've just built a new shed. I love this sort of stuff. And I want to put down a concrete slab with Wes. Wes actually works for me, and so he knows he gets dragged through all these reno projects. So it's pretty funny. But normally it's a worry, furrowed brow. What are you doing, Moody? Anyway. But I've gone and seen an architect right recently. Just sort of trying to do a Liz Hamilton and dreaming big, right, where you sort of, sky's the limit, the budget's not a problem, and you just, you know, whatever it is. So I went out and saw an architect and said, here's this beautiful house. If I wanted to make it amazing, like seriously over the top, what could you do? and they've just come back to me with some plans, and man, I love the plans. Like, it looks really good. So tonight, I'd really actually just love to not give a message, just talk about my reno plans at home. But I can tell you all about the subterranean cellar I want to put in and all this stuff, right? It's going to be awesome. Okay. And I might just do it. But I actually want to talk about a really big reno project, and it's a reno project God's actually doing in all of our lives. Total renovation project that he's doing for all of us. And there's a whole lot of things that are similar about renovating a house, as I've been reflecting on it, to what God is doing in renovating your life, changing it around, making it the best it can be. And I've been thinking about this, three key things you need to successfully renovate. You need a willing owner. That's the first thing. You need a willing owner to be able to renovate. You need a great architect, somebody who's done a master design, and you need a team of workers to follow the plan. So for my project at home, right, this big reno project, I'm definitely willing. Definitely willing. Mel's not so willing, you know. I've worked in there for a year digging a subterranean cellar and dust everywhere. Mel's not so willing, but I reckon she'll come around if I work on it. at least we've got one willing owner in our home. So I've gone to see this architect, right, and they've done these great plans. You need a great design, and it's amazing what architects can do. It's unbelievable. Like, I thought I was pretty good at sort of thinking about what could be done. But you take your sort of rough scribbles and drawings to them, and they fit a new cupboard here and a new thing there and a door here. It's really great. God has an incredible plan for our life. And when we're thinking about this, he has absolute perfect plans. The actual architectural plan for my home, I've tried to take into account what my life would be like in like 20 years' time, if I had grandkids or something. You know, like, wouldn't it be great if they came here? You sort of forward project on what it could be like and what would be fantastic for the future. But God's plan for your life, just think about this. He knows exactly what's going to happen, not only tomorrow and in 20 years' time, but all the way through. So he's the master architect in the fact that he knows what's going to happen. He knows what he's got in store for you. He knows what's going to be best for you. He knows how you'll be able to best serve him. He knows what he's going to do in your life. So his plan isn't just one that's great for 20 years' time. It's great forever. Now, I reckon we'd all agree that for God to renovate in our lives, we need to be willing. So that's the first thing. I think we'd all agree, it's pretty obvious, isn't it? You need God's plans for your life. You need the great architect. But this third one, which is a team of workers, is one that I really just want to pause and focus on just for a little bit tonight. This is the one that's not quite so obvious and actually is the very point that worldwide, in the Western world, is railroading people right across God's church. Especially in the Western world. Why would we need a team of people to renovate our lives? So back in my home renovation, I've costed it out and I can't afford it. As I said, I'm doing a Liz Hamilton and that's not stopping me. Thinking big. Joe's smiling. So I plucked up the courage the other day and I called my bank manager. Now my bank manager's a nice dude. His name's Jeff, right? And Jeff Reed. And he doesn't have a big sense of humour, but he's a nice fella. And I can give him a call and have a little bit of a chat. And I said, "Hey, Jeff, I want to renovate my house. How much will you loan me?" And he goes, that's interesting, Isaac. And, whenever the bank manager says that, And he goes, "Who are you going to use as a builder?" And I said, "Well, Jeff, I'm pretty good at project managing. I'm going to do it myself. Bit by bit, I'll hire in some tradies when I get stuck, save some costs." Anyway, long pause on the phone. He doesn't say much. And then he goes, "We're prepared to lend you the money. We won't let you do the renovation yourself." He goes, "You need a professional builder. And when people renovate themselves, it normally goes wrong." And it made me think about this with God and renovation in our life. There's a whole lot of people think that they can renovate themselves. Now, I know that God's word says that his Holy Spirit will lead us into all truth, and that if we got marooned on some island somewhere and there's nobody around, I'm sure that God's renovation and plan for our life can happen. He's sovereign, it can happen. But do you know that teaching in the New Testament is absolutely full of teaching and encouragement and scriptures and exhortations on actually how to do life together as a church so that God's plan for your life can actually be enacted? Mm-hmm. There's actually no consideration or even allusion to the fact that you can do it on your own. We actually need God's church to be able to complete God's renovation plan in your life. And then, of course, I remembered back to those reno shows, you know, those DIY project managers who came up, check out chicks and think they can manage a big project. You know, it always ends in a disaster. Made me think, you know, if you want it to be messy, if you want it to have budget overruns, if you want it to be stressful, I mean, you do it on your own. And there's so many similarities to God's renovation project in our life. If we try and follow God's plan just by ourselves, as in not in community, not in church, we normally go wrong. It's amazing that God's designed his church so that in all of our lives, the great renovation project in our lives is carried out in the most perfect way with others around us. But then this incredible thought that every single person here, so if there's 70 people in this room and that's God's 70 renovation projects happening at the moment. God wants to renovate your life. He wants to see that perfect plan he has in a willing heart come through. The amazing thing is, as we're all here together, doing church together, whether it's small church or our life groups or coming to big church, is that God's plan is also for you to renovate be part of the renovation project in everyone else's life here. So it's not just about us. It's actually we're all master builders and we're also receiving the building from others. It's an incredible thought that not only don't we do life in isolation just because it's good for us, because our lives need renovating, but because other people around us need us to build into their lives as well. So I've got a couple of points on that. Now these mostly, actually all, come from our reading plan in the last little bit. So if you've been on the church app and you go to the daily reading plan, there's been mostly maybe four or five different scriptures that jump all over the Bible, but they basically all come back to what is the church. And the church, we can talk all the time about the church and different things. My emphasis tonight is how it is part of God's renovation project for our lives and others' lives. But I want to pick out some of these things and why it's so important to do life together. Number one, practically serve each other. This is why we do church. This is part of the renovation project. We practically serve each other. Philippians 2:5, we've just read it in our reading plan. It says, in your relationships with one another, have the same mindset as Jesus Christ. So in other words, in our relationships as a church, be just like Jesus. And then it goes on to explain what Jesus is like, that he was the greatest servant of all. So we should be serving each other. That's part of what church is. That's how, if we're practically serving each other. And I'm not necessarily talking about praying for people here. I'm saying, like, if somebody's in need, are we going to make them a meal? How are we practically serving each other? Here's a good checklist. You know, if somebody says to you, do you go to church? And go, yeah, yeah, I come to big church. But do you know part of being church is practically serving each other? Actually practically doing things? I know of needs right across this church at the moment where people need a bit of help. And I know so many people do that. The mow lords, they practically serve. I know we've been really blessed as a family when Nellie came and practically served us by looking after our kids the other day. That was real practical service. That's what Jesus would do. Let's practically serve each other. This is what the church needs. This is part of being master builders in each other's lives. Mm-hmm. Now, here's a pretty full-on one. You ready? Correct each other. Now, this is pretty full on. You never think of this, and this is sort of what you want to gloss over. You know, we think of encourage each other, and there's heaps of scriptures about that, but I'll pick this one up tonight. Correct each other. Whether we like it or not, in 2 Timothy 2, 23-26, talks about how we all need to learn to give biblical correction to those who are in sin or in serious doctrinal error. Man, I've needed this in my life. I remember John Bond, who's given a lot of input into our church in these early years. a pastor from Perth. I've known him for years through being involved with Compassion. And he's given me some serious correction in life. And I've needed him. And that's been the building in my life. He corrected me, actually, because I said to him, this is about 10 years, I was like really questioning the need for daily devotions. And he just corrected me, really corrected me. And then followed up, by the way. I used to see him four times a year. And every time he'd ask, how are you going in your daily devotions with Jesus? And as correction, like I wasn't doing it. I was resisting it. We need that around. This is part of the master building in all of our lives that we need. We need correction. When we see something, it's the hardest thing in the world to pull them up. But man, this is what God needs. Are we willing? Mm. Are we willing to have the renovation in our lives? Are we willing to take the painful thing of correcting in love? Mm. Correcting others? Listen to this. Without correction, churches and families tend to run into the ditch. Paul shows Timothy how to carry out the gentle art of correction. Now, especially applies to church leaders, but it also applies to every Christian, because we all have relationships that require correction at times. And if we truly love others, for us to offer biblical correction. It's not a pleasant task, but it's a biblical task of love. Now, here's another full-on one. I'm doing the two full-on ones together. Confess sins to each other. Man, this is one I don't like a lot, hey? Who really wants to, those who you're friends with, confess what you're doing wrong, you sin to each other? But this is part of God's renovation project. Did you know confessing sins to each other, there's no opportunity for solo there. There's no, well, not solo. There's an opportunity for you, mate. There's no opportunity to go alone, you know what I mean? Sure, there's grace if you're stuck on an island somewhere. Confess your sins to a coconut or something. But you know, it implies that we've got to do this together in life.
Yeah.
We need the church. James 5, verse 6, therefore confess your sins to each other and pray for each other so that you may be healed. The prayer of a righteous person is powerful and effective. Now, with both those, confessing and correction, it reminds me of Elise when she was a baby. Now, Elise is our oldest, so she's 11 and a half, firstborn. We're in the hospital, and that's where you go to have babies. And little Elise popped out, and there she was. And the first thing that my father... he wasn't there for the delivery, just clarify. He came up after it was all about it. Yeah, I've told you my theory on men being part of the labour. Anyway, don't worry about that. My father was up there, and my dad's a doctor, right? All my family's a doctor, or doctors, or nurses or something, right? And the first thing Dad does is he doesn't like, oh, isn't this a little cute, you know, blah, blah, blah. He gets... the hip, like the legs, pushes them back and sees if they'll dislocate. That's what he does, first thing. It's just what doctors do. And because if the hips aren't formed properly, they'll have what they call clicky hips, and you can feel it clicking in and out, clicking in and out. Doesn't for all of our kids, right? First thing, straight up. And you know, then he gets to know them after that. What a way to meet your first grandchild. It's true, eh, Mel? It's the first thing Dad did. And Dad goes, this one has clicky hips. And sure enough, it did, and so we had a specialist come in. All the rest of our kids didn't have it. And so we then saw Dr. Poon, who's a really great doctor in town, and he had a look, and he goes, right, what we're going to do is we're going to put a full-body cast on Elise. Now, she wore, it was 3 months, 6 months?
6 weeks.
6 weeks, there we go. Exactly. And not like 6 months. And it's a full-body fiberglass cast that splays out her legs and holds it in the perfect spot for the hip to heal. And and then after 6 weeks, it can come off and the hip is perfectly healed. It's pretty cool, actually. When you have that full body cast and you just lift them up like a handle, like, it's pretty cool. It's really helpful. Just carry them around like this. The disadvantage is when they do those really bad, you know, the first poo, the really black tar one? Those haven't had kids yet, and then the rest of them come out real well formed either. It's pretty hard to wipe off the cast. But apart from that, it's great. A hip was really, really great. It was healed. It's fine. Look at Elise. She runs around, really active, really well-formed here. You know, there's such a parallel to this to our own behavior in life. You know, it, as in our natural state, we slip up. We do things that are wrong. And God's designed the church to be a bit like the brakes, where we need each other. That helps our behavioral patterns and correction. And we actually then, from each other, learn the habit of how to behave well and how to sin less and how to glorify God more and how to practically serve each other more. It's like a brace around our life, actually. Without the church, we don't have that brace. So the hip can slip out. We can do things wrong. And, you know, it becomes habit too. And so I'm thankful for all of you guys. I'm thankful for Steve. You know, it does go through my mind sometimes in behavioural things. Like, you know, what will others think? And you don't want that to go too far, but God uses this in a practical, good way to be, hang on, yeah, no, we need to do the right thing. I need, and then it becomes habit. Mm. And that's where community is great. Mm. Just got two last quick points. Pastorally care for each other. Here's part of God's renovation project plans for us to pastorally care for each other. We only read this, I think it was 2 days ago in the reading plan. Hebrews 10:24. Let us consider how to spur one another on to love and good deeds. Let us not neglect meeting together as some have made a habit, but let us encourage one another. And all the more as you see the day approaching. You know, we come to church not just to sing and do worship, it was a great meeting, but we come to church also to spur one another on in love and good deeds. To point people to Jesus, to pastoral care for people. And then finally, to pray for each other. Here's another incredibly striking verse from Matthew 18, verse 19, which only makes sense in the context of togetherness, as in multiple people. You know, the living on the island scenario doesn't work here. So it's again, truly I tell you, that if two of you on earth agree about anything they ask, it'll be done for them by my Father in heaven. For where two or three gather in my name, there am I with them. So Jesus is here. Now Jesus is with us too when we're on our own. But there's something powerful about a number of people, two or three people, gathering together. Just practically serving each other, correcting and confessing sin to each other, caring for each other, pastoring caring for each other, spurring each other on and praying for each other. We're actually going to finish tonight with an opportunity, not so much to pray for each other. We're going to divide the room into five or six different groups. And I want everybody to leave here having a prayer point for somebody else tonight. Because this is what the church does. So to practically pull that up. But I've got a few more things to say and then we'll get into that. Hey, in the moment in our life, in any sort of given moment, it always feels like you can renovate on your own. Like just think of that in your own life. Like something difficult happens or things are going well or normal life happens and you just think, look, it won't matter if I'm not in community just for a minute because I can kind of do this on my own. It's a real temptation. It's actually really costly to get others involved in your own life renovation project. Mm. It's really costly. You know, it's really costly to get a builder to come and renovate your own home too. I can do a way cheaper DIY. I just won't do a very good job. Won't do a good job. It's actually costly. It takes an investment. The same thing in the renovation project in our own lives is it's actually costly. It requires turning up. It requires being present. You know, church sometimes is a real pain in the backside. I've got to tell you. I started work this morning at 6:30 a.m. It's the last. I've said this before and I'll probably keep saying it. I think of it every Sunday I do that. I don't want to go to church. I really don't. And then you've got to break through. It's costly. It takes an investment. And then you realise that blessings come from it and that people get to input into your life and then I get to input into other people's lives. Like, it really is worth it. It's costly, but it's really worth it. And, you know, the thing I love is it's not all about us. It doesn't just help our life. It helps others. If there's 70 renovation projects in this room, as I look across each of you, consider yourself a renovation project, then you all need God's people in your life helping build it. And you're needed in other people's life to help build them. Hey, there's nothing more frustrating
Ezra, there you are. You're a tradie, mate. There's nothing more frustrating when you book in a tradie and they don't turn up. Who's ever had that when you booked in a plumber and they don't turn up? Yeah, money from up their hands. It's so frustrating. You've had it, Steve?
Yeah.
That's annoying. Actually, I remember that. There's some electricians that don't turn up and work for you. And
yeah,
it's so frustrating. Your plan. Well, I know you always turn up, Ezra. But, do you? And, it's so frustrating. Well, think of yourself here, every person tonight, as a tradie, as part of the renovation project in other people's lives. So we're not just talking about your life, we're talking about you being a tradie in other people's life. If you don't show up, it's really frustrating. Now, the work will get done eventually, but it sort of slows it all up. So we've got to be present. I really encourage us. Be part of church, not just because it's great seeing, not because you get me up here or Maddie or Steve or whoever's speaking. It's because you're actually a tradie working in other people's lives. I don't know who you're going to connect with after this sermon tonight. And I hope you do. Find that little thing where you can really work in somebody else's life. Be a tradie for Jesus in other people's life. Hey, a quick thing. Here's something sobering. A friend of mine's called Mark McArdle, and he's a social researcher, I think. Josh and his sister still works for him, do they? Does she? No, she's quit. No, she didn't turn up. Okay, fair enough. She's been recorded. Sorry, Mark. Sorry. Annie? Okay, now he produced some stats which tell us something really full on. If you want an example of how messed up and wrong the renovation project in your own life can go if you're not part of community, check out these stats. Now, these are sobering. Did you know that if you're a parent and you stop regularly attending church, there's over a 70% chance that your children will have no faith in Jesus by the age of 20. And 95% of all your grandchildren will not have a faith in Jesus at the age of 20. So when somebody comes to Jesus, it changes a generational line. Like, say, Jess, if your family wasn't a Christian and you came to Jesus, you know, you don't realize the impact that that will have for generations to come. And I know a whole lot of us are single here and we don't think of this, but always. And the effect of what we're doing in our own life now affecting maybe 1,000 people in 100 years' time, because that's probably how many great-grandchildren you're likely to have or something, Jess. So, you know, sorry, pick on you. You scared? You know, but it's true. What we do now affects down the line in an amazing way. So if you, like, became a Christian or whatever, then the whole legacy of your future generations is incredible. I think of, who was it? I don't know, but generations ago, my family's always been sort of Christian down through the ages. Who was it who made the extraordinary decision to follow Jesus that affects my life all the way down the track? But 95% of grandchildren, that seems way off, won't know Jesus. It actually puts a stop in generational redemption. So, man, this is important, this community stuff. Not only because the Bible talks about it, says, hey, don't give up on it, and encourage so much to have a community for us all to be tradies in each other's life, but statistically, what we can see in real life in Australia and America says, hey, I'm hoping you're willing for God to renovate your life. I hope you're willing to be part of the renovation project in other people's life. God definitely has a plan, and He is the master architect. And God's plan for your life is incredible. God's plan for all of our lives is incredible. So here's a question: are you prepared to embrace the church? Not really just church. I mean, we are. We don't, you know, just church is just church. That's what it is. But God's people, God's community. That's really what it is. You know, people who say to me, oh, I love Jesus, but I hate the church. Well, it just doesn't work out. It doesn't work out. I mean, you can't love. That's like saying you know, it just doesn't make sense. God's church is His bride. We've really got to embrace it. Sometimes with all the pain and frustration that it is, but we can all play a part in it. So are you prepared to let your life be renovated, and are you prepared and willing to be a tradie in other people's life? Well, I hope so. I really do hope so. So I'm going to pray in a minute, and then we're going to do something we haven't done in Just Church before.
And it's not eat Tim Tams, we get to do that as well. But what I want is just a little practical outworking of this. You see, we all come and sit and you've all heard from me. That's kind of church, but it's kind of not church too, you know, like we sort of do it and that's all nice and great. But probably the most important thing that we're going to do tonight is going to happen right now. We're going to break into just smaller groups. We're not going to pray for each other on the spot unless you want to. But I just want every single person here, within the small context, to come away with something we can pray for each other for. And I'd love for us to be in this habit of doing this every time we get together as a church. And then not only when we get together in small or big church, but what about when we bump into somebody down the street who's part of this church? How can I practically serve? How can I pray? How can I be a master trainee in your life?
Yeah.
How can I contribute? How can I build up? How can I exhort? How can I spur the other person on?
Yeah.
Have this real giving mindset. So we're going to practically do it tonight. So is that all really clear?
Yeah.
Sure.
Now, if, look, try and, you know, probably in each group, we'll have different leaders. Just make sure everyone gets an opportunity. Some things I realise you might need prayer for that are big issues that are probably more private or whatever. And that's fine too. You can see any of the leaders. We want to be a church that really does pray. And you know, if you're praying for your situation, somebody else is praying, then Jesus is in the midst of that.
Yeah.
If you really want Jesus to be in the midst of your life, get somebody else praying for you.
Yeah,
yeah,
get two or three. As many as you can. That's what we're here for. So is that all cool? So we're going to break into these two. This two row here can be a bit of a group. It's got Ezra in it, so you'll be all right as a trainee. And then these two rows here, if you want to get in a bit of a group. And these two. And we might do a bit of a combination of the back three rows, hey? Because Mel's the only one in her row. And then Jim Rich's row.